This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The economic and social situation in Tunisia is quite dire, and the rising unemployment could increase social unrest and destabilize the nascent democracy, the only democracy in the Arab world.
That's Radwan Masmoudi, president of the Center for the Study of Islam and Democracy in Tunis, on the impact of the recent spike of COVID-19 cases in Tunisia. Details coming up also. 25 people, including 13 soldiers, were killed in central Mali yesterday by suspected Islamist militants. And protests against police brutality continue in Nigeria. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Tunisia was initially a role model in Africa for containing the spread of COVID-19 by imposing a lockdown in late March that kept the number of daily cases in the single digits. But that figure has jumped to more than 2,000 a day, forcing the government to revert to a strict lockdown. Officials say the pandemic has already cost the troubled economy more than $2 billion, and unemployment has jumped from 15% to 18% and could reach 20% by the end of the year. Radwan Masmoudi, president of Center of the Study of Islam and Democracy in Tunis, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El Shenawi the reasons behind the surge and its impact on the economy and the health system.
Well, actually, Tunisia did very well in the first round of the virus and had almost zero new cases during the entire month of June, because it had a good lockdown in April and May and was basically able to not have any new cases at all for an entire month and a half. And I think that gave Tunisians a false sense of security. And Tunisian officials made the tragic mistake of opening the borders for tourists in July and August, mainly from European countries, and not requiring any kind of testing for COVID-19 before or during their visits. And I think that's when, at the end of August, is when we started seeing cases of COVID patients start to rise slowly at the end of August, and then really peaked at the end of September.
Tunisian government said the COVID-19 pandemic has already caused the troubled economy more than $2 billion and unemployment increased from 15 to 18% and could reach 20% by the end of this year. Given that unemployment was a key driver for the Tunisian revolution, is the Tunisian government taking a risk of social unrest by reverting to strict lockdown?
Yes, I'm afraid so. The economic and social situation in Tunisia is quite dire, and the rising unemployment could increase social unrest and destabilize the nascent democracy, the only democracy in the Arab world. Many young people in Tunisia are increasingly angry and frustrated and disenchanted by democracy and the inability of the nascent democratic system to provide jobs or even a better standard of living for most Tunisians. Since the revolution, for 10 years now, the unemployment has been steady at 15%. And now, because of COVID pandemic, it is actually increasing. And I think it is near 20% now. So it is really alarming to see this trend in Tunisia today.
The government said that the available number of intensive care beds is not yet strained. Is the health system in Tunisia capable of handling the rising number of new cases?
The health system in Tunisia is not adequate and has been suffering from lack of funding for decades. And as a result, Tunisia has only about 450 intensive care beds. And that is obviously not enough to handle the rising number of cases, which now are almost 2,000 new cases per day. And so it is very urgent to buy new beds and new respirators to handle the increasing number of COVID-19 patients as quickly as possible, or we might really have a very dangerous situation where COVID patients are not able to be treated or to be helped during this pandemic.
Does Tunisia need outside help to face the COVID-19 surge?
Yes, I think we do. I think we need help from our European friends and from the United States, especially economic assistance right now, because the economy is really in dire need of a stabilization program. And also we need help in terms of buying and supplying medical assistance and respirators and intensive care beds and all the equipment that is needed to handle the rising number of cases in Tunisia.
That was Radwan Masmoudi, president of the Center for the Study of Islam and Democracy in Tunis, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. 25 people, including 13 soldiers, were killed in multiple attacks yesterday by suspected Islamist militants in central Mali. Reuters reports the attacks were the deadliest since the August 18th military coup that overthrew the president and came just days after the interim government freed scores of jailed militants in a prisoner swap. Mali has been struggling to contain a jihadist insurgency that began in 2012 and has spread to the center of the country and neighboring Burkina Faso and Niger. Thousands of soldiers and civilians have been killed in the fighting, and hundreds of thousands of people have been forced to flee their homes. Anger at Mali's brutal conflict contributed to protests against President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita this year, which culminated in the bloodless coup. An interim government is set to govern for 18 months before holding elections. But the French news agency AFP says the presence of military officers in the upper echelon of government appears to have done little to stem the flow of the attacks. South Africa's Gauteng provincial government has published a proposed economic development bill that is coming under fire from human rights groups. They warn the bill could stoke xenophobic violence. If passed, the bill will prohibit foreign nationals without permanent residency permits from operating small businesses in some townships. Tusoko Malo reports from Johannesburg.
Townships like Cosmos City, Diepsloot, Alexandra, Dobsonville, Soweto, Tembisa, and many others are abuzz with tuck shops, internet cafes, small eateries, hair salons, and many other small businesses operated by foreign nationals. But if the Gauteng province's new economic development bill goes into law, many foreign nationals could end up with no means of livelihood. The bill, which has been published for public review, proposes that only South Africans and foreign nationals with permanent residence permits be allowed to operate these small businesses. Thousands of foreign nationals operating small businesses in the townships are not permanent residents. But Gauteng spokesperson Thabo Masebe says the bill does not discriminate against immigrants.
The intention of this legislation is to enable people to start and operate their businesses in the townships. Very positive. It's not against anybody. It is actually for the people who operate businesses in the townships.
However, Sharon Ekambarami from the Lawyers for Human Rights says it is indeed discriminatory and against the Constitution.
Refugees and asylum seekers are not permanent residents. They have a particular documentation and they will be excluded from this. And as per their status in the country, they have a right to work. And this is now being challenged and will be seriously impeded. And that goes against international law. It goes against our very constitution.
Kajal Ramjatan Kiyok, Africa Director at the International Commission of Jurists, says the bill could be dangerous as well.
The potential harm which the bill would cause would include the reinforcement of existing societal prejudice and discrimination, which has already been the cause of xenophobic violence since before 2008. So the potential harm here in this bill is not limited exclusively to financial harm.
But Matopane Masha from the Gauteng Economic Development says they are hoping that the ongoing public input will fine-tune the bill.
The bill is not banning anybody. It does not render anything that is currently legal illegitimate. What it basically seeks to do is to pretty much affirm South Africans in a sense that we are able to enable them to access support. The bill is currently out for public consultation until the end of the month. It will definitely lead to much more inputs and enriches the final product.
Gauteng is the province with the highest number of foreign nationals. Small businesses operated by foreign nationals in townships are often looted whenever locals protest against poor service delivery by the government. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Protests against police brutality continue in Nigeria, even after a particularly notorious unit was dissolved and replaced, and the president promised reforms. Gifta Gariga from Abuja has more.
Inspector General of Police Mohammed Adamu says the new Special Weapons and Tactics Unit will fill the gaps arising from the dissolution Sunday of the Special Anti-Robbery Squad, SARS, amid outcries of police brutality.
As a responsive and citizen-oriented police force, it is hereby directed as follows. 1. The Special Anti-Robbery Squad of the Nigeria Police, otherwise known as SARS, is hereby dissolved across all formations.
Adamu's previous announcement of the dissolution of SARS had failed to end the protests that started last week. The protesters are still unhappy that SARS officers are being redeployed to other units rather than being punished. One of the conveners of the Abuja End SARS movement, Anita Izato, says protesters are still on the streets because they are not convinced anything will change.
There's a lack of trust between the Nigerian youth and the government. Now, the news that just came in is that the police have instituted a SWAT team. We are back to square one. Why are they renaming this? We are still on the street because we need to see actions, concrete steps that have been taken.
President Muhammadu Buhari promised extensive police reform on Monday.
The disbanding of SARS is only the first step in our commitment to extensive police reform in order to ensure that the primary duty of the police and other law enforcement agencies remains the protection of lives and livelihoods of our people.
He also promised to bring to justice all those responsible for the misconduct or wrongful acts. Okechukwu Nwangoma, a civil rights activist, called on Nigeria government to totally overhaul the police force for an increased commitment.
We want a timeline set for retraining and psychological evaluation of all officers. We want to see increased commitment to police reform, including improved funding to improve welfare, enhance effectiveness, and reduce corruption and abuse.
And SARS protesters have held major demonstrations nationwide and in some cities across the world since the protests started last week. For VOA News, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
Ugandan presidential candidate and pop star Bobby Wine says police raided his Kampala office today and took away documents and other items. Wine, whose real name is Robert Chagulani, said in a tweet that some leaders of his National Unity Platform party were injured. David Lewis Rubonogia, an official of Wine's party, told the Associated Press that police took security cameras and supplies of the red berets, which are Wine's campaign symbol. Wine is challenging President Yoweri Museveni in next year's election. Museveni took power in 1986. Critics accuse him of relying on the armed forces to stay in power and committing human rights abuses. However, many Ugandans support him because of the country's decades of stability and economic growth. Museveni accuses wine of encouraging young people to riot and says foreigners are using wine's supporters to destabilize the country. Supporters of a group of Cameroonian asylum seekers who entered the United States illegally decried their expected deportation today, saying they could face persecution back home. Some in Cameroon say some of those seeking asylum instigated violence in the country's separatist conflict and should face charges. But state media are putting a positive spin on the return, as Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the city of Douala.
More than 20 Cameroonians gathered Wednesday at the Douala International Airport to await relatives expected to be deported from the United States. 27-year-old Jennifer Monet says she fears her older brother will be at risk if he is forced back to Cameroon. Last year, she says he fled fighting in Cameroon's Anglophone separatist conflict.
You are either afraid of separatist fighters or you are afraid of the military. And leaving these regions and going to the Francophone parts of Cameroon, they look at you as a separatist, and leaving Cameroon and going to the US to seek asylum, and yet they want you back in Cameroon where you don't have peace, you don't have any freedom, really. It's a violation of human rights.
Moni says she is looking for another country that will accept her and her brother. Cameroon's government has not confirmed the deportations or expected arrivals. But State Cameroon Radio Television, CRTV, this week reported that a chartered flight was expected Wednesday from Dallas, Texas, with 126 deported asylum seekers on board. CRTV reported 86 of them were Cameroonians and the rest were believed to be from the Democratic Republic of Congo. In August, government-led protests in front of the U.S. Embassy in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, called for Washington to either charge or deport Cameroonians who allegedly were backing Anglophone rebels. Activist Hilda Manga participated in the protests and says those who were deported from the U.S. should be investigated and punished if they supported the separatists.
That is a great initiative which must be applauded, because it is high time they are sent home to face charges and answer to the crimes they have committed. They should return home and let's see how together we can put an end to this crisis that has kept the masses suffering for four good years.
Cameroon's state media gave no indication as to when the asylum seekers would face arrest and put a positive spin on their return. CRTV said they were needed to help rebuild Cameroon and that authorities had sent medical experts to take care of them before, during, and after their deportation. Alexandra Lamarche works with the group Refugees International as a senior advocate for West and Central Africa. She says the deportations are appalling.
In the case of many Cameroonians seeking asylum in the U.S., they have fled the country fearing attacks from the government. Many are from the conflict-ridden Anglophone region or supported opposition parties or have been vocal about the authorities' poor human rights track record. Regardless of why they came, most of them will undoubtedly face retaliatory attacks from the government upon their return.
U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, as a policy, does not comment on deportations until after they have occurred. The Cameroonians entered the U.S. illegally last year via South America and Mexico. The administration of President Donald Trump has been cracking down on illegal immigrants and making it harder for asylum claims to be approved. Fighting broke out in 2016 after Cameroon's military cracked down on Anglophones calling for an independent state within the mainly French-speaking country. Cameroon's English speakers say they are treated as second-class citizens and given fewer jobs and support from the state. The United Nations says more than 3,000 people have been killed in Cameroon's separatist conflict and half a million others displaced. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Douala, Cameroon.
About 500 volunteers continue to battle wildfires that broke out Sunday on Mount Kilimanjaro, Africa's highest peak. Tanzania's National Parks Agency said late yesterday that the volunteers have managed to limit the fire's spread. The Associated Press reported that about 28 square kilometers of vegetation have been burned. Park officials say they still have not identified the cause of the fire. Mount Kilimanjaro is the world's highest single freestanding mountain, reaching nearly 6,000 meters above sea level. It attracts about 50,000 mountain climbers from around the world every year. A World Bank report shows Ghana loses at least 315,000 hectares of its forests each year. To help change that, a Ghanaian project is promoting sustainable forestry, teaching people the economic benefits of letting trees stand and surrounding vegetation live. Stacy Knott reports from Bremen, Bedum, Ghana.
Wellington Baden calls his lush 85-hectare forest a green supermarket. It produces fish, wood products, seedlings, fruits, and essential oils. Baden grows a range of trees, some fast-growing, many indigenous and endangered trees, as well as aromatic plants that produce natural oils used in perfumes. While forestry is usually a long-term project, where the income comes with the harvest, Portal Forest Estates generates income both in the short and long term. Baden is starting to harvest the trees he planted 20 years ago, but he's replacing them and creating other businesses within the forest to ensure its future and benefit to the surrounding communities, which he says is the key to sustainability.
Having a working forest is, I would say, a key component to restoring forest cover, because one, it provides jobs for the community, and the encroachment basically happens because people need to survive.
One of Baden's products is natural oils. Baden is working with local farmers to grow plants like ylang-ylang and citronella, whose oils he can sell on international markets. Chemist Justice Krensel spends his days distilling the plants to create the oils. He says he's the only one from his graduating class in this line of work, which he believes will help Ghana's future.
The fact that you're not really damaging the forest, you're not cutting down trees, and the fact that we don't use any fertilizers in the forest, so everything comes from Mother Nature, and that's a bit mind-boggling.
He hopes this project will become a blueprint to ensure other forests are spared degradation when people see the long-term financial benefits held within them. 90 miles away, campaigners have been battling to save a different forest from government mining plans. Daryl Bosu from environmental non-governmental organisation Arocha Ghana says the working forest idea is key to stopping tree loss in Ghana by showing people the benefits in the short, medium and long term of keeping forest cover. He says business models like Baden's are imperative for the sustainable use of natural resources, and they can also encourage conservation and restoration.
I think it's a good inspiration for every entrepreneur, a business person and all of that, so that now forest management is not only the requisite, I would say, mandate of government, but also of every individual, because the opportunities for benefit is enormous.
Baden is also planning a bigger distillery and an eco-resort and learning centre within the forest. He says the learning centre will train farmers and educate visitors about the forest project. He wants it to inspire people to see the benefits in sustainable forests, creating what he calls wealth in perpetuity. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Bremen, Bedum.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyesu Uhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Yabaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.